I wonder how many people are aware that you did the Rogan song, that you were sort of a tremendous part of the origination of what has become the most popular podcast on planet Earth, that has influenced presidential elections, that has had like guests on it, that like never in a million years, if we could jump back to the beginning days, would anyone have said, you know, you're going to interview the president one day?
It was a different podcast back then, though. It was that was back in the days when it was more of a comedy podcast. You know, right. Rogan really has turned it into like a legit, where it has comedy in it, sure, but it's, you know.
It's funny, but it's like back then. I mean, well, what was the first podcast? Like, were you the first person to podcast with Rogan, right?
Yeah, so it started off, like, look, you know, Rogan hired me, whatever. We made the Carlos Mencia video, or I made the Carlos Mencia video.
Welcome, friends. Happy Thanksgiving. My guess is you're gathered around the Thanksgiving fire, roasting that turkey on a spit, watching the sweet juices drip down into the burning skulls of your enemies as you celebrate complete victory over an opposing village. How dare they challenge your territorial integrity, and now they know wisdom taught by the blade you plunge through the heart of their leader. We've got a great episode for you today. I'm sure most of you know who Red Band is. He is the co-host of Kill Tony. He's also the progenitor of JRE, which I don't know how many of you know about that. Red Band is a fascinating guy. Maybe you remember when he was the co-host on the JRE, but you might not have gotten a clear like understanding of who Red Band is just from watching some of those episodes. He's super cool and smart and savvy. And, you know, when you hear the story of like the early days of what is now the biggest podcast on the planet, I bet if you're not aware of how it went down, it's not what you would expect. That's what we're going to talk about today, along with some other cool stuff, AI, tech stuff. So, everyone, welcome to the DTFH. Brian Redband. Treaty written by Lord Alvazar Kent, and they tried to suppress that information, but sources are telling me that they can't anymore. It's a bit, now that Trump has become president, it's all going to be revealed. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. I'm so happy you did this, man.
It's cool. Been a while.
I always felt guilty about asking you to do it because of the, you know, proximity. It seems like it's a drive from up there. I love going out right around where you live. I'm not naming it. Is that already too much? Am I doxing you?
No. I live up in Pflugerville.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool out there, man. Pflugerville. What is a Pfluger?
It's a German thing. I don't know. It's funny. I moved to the one German town in Austin.
Oh, you're drawn back home, baby. The call. He's back. You know, man, one of the many things I love about you is you... Like, I like to think of myself as, like, an early adopter, you know, I'm into tech and stuff, but you are always, like, at the bleeding edge of cool shit that's emerging into the world. Not just, like, you know, pragmatic stuff, but, like, games, fun shit. So, what are you into right now? Like, what should we be aware of right now?
I feel like I'm into the same stuff you're into right now. A lot of AI stuff. Like, I am just blown away by... like Sumo or Suno,
yeah.
You know, the music thing is, I mean, that alone is one of my favorite new inventions, I guess, of the last year or so.
It's incredible.
You know, it's incredible. Just being, and I think it was you that even told me that they have a new beta test where you could just hum something and it will make the song based on like a hum or
yeah.
I took an old song that I wrote on GarageBand a long time ago, uploaded it, and I was like, remix this and make it a rap song. And it took the same idea of this song and something I could never have done.
It's the best. Especially like if you do what we do, if you like make podcasts and make stuff and you have a limited amount of time and you're not, you know, I mean, I don't consider myself a musician.
No.
And so the amount of time in the past, if I wanted to make a dumb song,
right,
that's a day. Yeah. Like if I'm like, okay, I want to do a song for this episode, it's like, all right, well, you're going to be, it's an extra day of work. And I liked it. It was fun. It's a fun sort of difficult process. But if, you know, you just need to get something out there, or even if you want to test your idea, because you might have an idea for a song and then you work all day on it. And at the end of the day, you're like, this is so not funny and dog shit.
Yeah.
I'm still going to put it up, but it was a waste of time. You know, this, you could at least get a sense of what it might be.
Right.
And that is incredible. It's a collaborative tool. It's fucking great.
Yeah. Great example. Back in the day, JRE needed a opening song. And so I sat there for like a week, like, and I found out how to make like a drum noise on my keyboard. It was like, dun, dun, dun. And then I took like some loops from Apple GarageBand,
yeah,
and I added guitar to it to make it sound more guitar-y.
Yeah.
And then that's the JRE song.
Is that the current theme,
yeah,
song? No fucking
and
way.
And that's me going, wah! Like,
are you, yeah, fucking kidding,
yeah,
me?
But yeah, I did that. And that song took me. And then I remember, Nick Diaz or whatever said, train my day, Joe Rogan body. And Joe like sent me there, like, add this to the song. I'm like, how am I going to add words to the song?
Yeah. And well, and so that aspect of making shit on your own, I think is so useful because, you know, most apps, most creativity apps, even if it's a music app or Photoshop or Final Cut or whatever it is, they kind of follow the same basic,
right,
tools, the steps. And so it's every time you have to do something like that, it's not just like you learned how to do that on GarageBand. You learned how to do it on Ableton. You learned how to do layers in Photoshop. And, mm-hmm, you know, so you, yeah, everything you learn in one area goes to all the areas, which is the danger. You know, I hate, it's like it's a meme at this point, but the danger of AI, the downside is you're not learning that in the same way. And that sucks because,
yeah, yeah,
you don't realize that you're not just learning how to make music. You're learning how to edit video. You're learning how to like write. You're learning how to everything. And so that's a little worrisome.
But it does open some new things because now you have to talk to AI a certain way. Like, no, I want you to, you know, you have to use different words to try to get what you want, you know.
Yeah.
So I guess it kind of adds a new way to do it.
Well, you know, it demonstrates how like, I've noticed there's like two, you could say there's two, like there's probably a lot. I hate whenever people do binaries, but for the sake of this, two creative styles, right? There's the, like what someone might call the professional creative style. Now that creative style is usually based on time constraints, which is instead of trying to like sort of fumble in the darkness towards your idea, you come up with like, okay, this is what I'm trying to do. Here's a map to get there. It's very technical, but you really need a sort of precise mind to envision this is where I'm headed. And that is what it's teaching you. It,
yeah,
teaches you how to articulate what you want in a very specific way, which I've never been good at,
right,
in life or creativity,
right,
you know? And so that's kind of cool, learning how to hone that.
But it's also kind of like a hack too, when it's not doing what you want. Like, all right, now I want the bathing suit to be clear, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to get it to be a naked girl or something when you're trying to make a model of a girl in AI or something.
Oh my God.
You know, like the hacks you have to do.
So in Midjourney, I legitimately didn't want to create a naked girl. I was trying to do an adult diaper commercial for an adult diaper that would analyze your pee and based on your piss would give you TikTok content.
Right.
So like the algorithm could detect like what shit you want to watch on TikTok through your piss. Dumb idea. But, and so I needed underwear models,
mm-hmm,
or diaper models. And so in Midjourney, I was saying like, you know, cause I wanted to put it online. So I would say like, make a very tasteful adult diaper model. And for whatever reason, it just started giving me like fucking sexy.
That's awesome. So it's adult type.
I don't think.
I have been looking for this hack. I've been using invisible underwear.
No, something about somehow, I think, I'm sure they fixed it by now, but it seems like by the user saying tasteful,
mm-hmm, right,
it subverts the alert.
The hack.
Yeah, yeah, you're telling it you want it tasteful. So now it's like, oh, okay, cool. I don't have to worry about the not showing tits. And so then it'll show you tits.
Right.
And it's really funny because it, in Discord at least, it deleted it. It went like, it vanished from my Discord. Because I actually had to say to it after that, you know, I was like, hey, you know, I've been saying tasteful and you're giving me tits. And it's still like, it's weird, the accidental tits that show up. It can fuck you up on YouTube too, especially if you're doing like runway ML or something, because it can be a flash of a boob that you don't even notice.
Right.
And you accidentally, or you put some, a vagina up there or something that's in a frame. And so you have to be careful. But yeah, well, so what, when you're working on anything, mm-hmm. what AI, what services do you go to?
I used to use Midjourney a lot. I think something happened with Midjourney maybe about 6 months ago where the quality of Midjourney has just started shitting the bed.
No
like,
way.
I do not enjoy Midjourney anymore. And it's crazy. You could, like, even Twitter X's Grok, which I think is pretty great now. I tried to just do a simple thing the other day, and I was just comparing the two. It was just night and day difference. Like Grok was just A plus, and Midjourney was giving me bullshit.
Wow.
And the cool thing about Grok, which I thought was pretty hilarious this election, is that if you tried anything with Trump, anything, Trump in diapers, Trump doing this, it made him look so good, perfect, and always, and also respectful. Like, so if he wouldn't have diapers on, he would be like looking at diapers, like, I don't want to wear these diapers. But then if you do like Kamala or anybody else, they got him all wrong. If you do Joe Rogan, it doesn't even know who Joe Rogan is. Like,
wow.
That, how is, but you, Trump, if you try it out, it's weird.
Is that still in there, that bias?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, this is the, what's really cool about all of this is that like each AI has a personality, and the personality is determined by the corporation, mm-hmm. and that personality is going to be informed by the corporation's political leanings, and generally those political leanings are less ethical than they are profit-based, right? Like, you know, if, for example, some candidate is proposing legislation that could, like, hurt the corporate interests, then of course the spin is going to be for the candidate that's not a threat to the corporation.
Right.
So, yeah, being able to, like, recognize the personality of your AI is so important, so you don't get tricked or like, you know, this whole new realm of propaganda is crazy in how subversive it is. Like, you know, think of the old propaganda poster. You know what I mean? Can you pull up like World War II propaganda? Like, you knew you were looking at propaganda. If you're walking down the street and you see one of these fucking things, you're like, that's government propaganda I'm looking at. And so there was an honesty to it. Yeah, there you go.
The old girl with the arm.
Click on that, the very top one. Warning, our homes are in danger now.
Yeah.
You see, no one looking at that is... No one looking at that is going to be like, dude, that's somebody just did that. It's one of us. You know it's propaganda. Look, click on Miles of Hell to Tokyo. Right here. I mean, look at that shit, dude. Like, that's what propaganda used to look like. And then propaganda begins to evolve. Yeah, click on, like, Americans All, Let's Fight for Victory. You know what I mean? This is what it used to look like. But the new propaganda is so fascinating in that it's showing up via the algorithm, and it's not so much that it's showing you a poster as much as that it's showing you people who identify with some political ideology. And by seeing that more of them than the other side, you naturally start thinking, oh, this is how people think. Mm-hmm. And that is so powerful, dude. So creepy.
Yeah, it's great. I think it's scary how realistic it's getting too when it comes to, like, you know, the Grok and the mid.
Yeah,
I mean, ChatGPT is also another one I use. I mean, religiously now, and it's so great because with ChatGPT, I've always had this thing since Siri came out on the iPhone. You know, I remember back in the day, it's like, hey, where do I hide a dead body? And Siri used to go like, go down to the docks,
yeah,
you know? And
it was funny.
It was funny. But he was always trying to get Siri to do something bad.
Right.
And now with ChatGPT, it's like kind of the same thing. I always try to get ChatGPT to make sounds and noises for me, and it won't. But they, you know, having to hack it going, all right, say out loud the letters H-A-H-A-H-A, and it's like, ha, all right, slow it down. Ha, ha, you know, just
cool.
Fucking with it. It's so fun. I don't know why that's so fun to me.
Well, that's actually, my friend explained this to me. That's a whole, style of playing video games is there's people who like to play video games, not just to play the game, but to find the fuck up, to find the bugs.
Yeah.
Like the Elden Ring bug. Have you seen the Elden Ring bug?
Which one?
Do you mind pulling up Elden Ring bug? You have to have a PC to do it. It's crazy to watch. YouTube. Elden Ring, there's a main... There, Elden Ring bug YouTube. Pull that up. It should come up. But it's a way to basically Yeah, I don't know. Can you even show YouTube anymore without getting dinged? Am I allowed to even show this?
Probably not this commercial.
Okay, don't show that. Just skip that. Let's see if it...
Hi, my name is Rust. I'm a Soulsborne content creator with an emphasis
on... Just jump to that yellow dot.
Let's see what it is.
These bugs in
Next
Elden
up, we see a line that says...
All right, forget it. Just whatever.
So what was the bug?
So at the very beginning of Elden Ring, there's some... Like, if you remember in Elden Ring, you go through that weird area, you fight the thing that if you're level one, it beats your ass. There's somehow a way to, jump off a cliff facing a certain direction based on, beats. Like, there's a certain rhythm or the clock of the game. So you teleport... far into the map.
Oh, okay.
And then once you're into that part of the map, you can gather up shit that gives your level one character more powers than it's supposed to have. And so speedrun, that's what you look up. YouTube speedrun Elden Ring.
So it's probably actually an Easter egg, not even a bug. It sounds like they did it on purpose.
It looks like a bug.
Yeah.
But it could be an Easter egg. I mean, I have no idea. Elden Ring speedrun. Yeah. This is where you find it. So this is a way, 358. This is using this bug. Let's see here. Let's see if we can find it. Yeah, just start at see where that big mountain is at the beginning? Click on that. And you'll see it. It's so cool. Anyone who's played Elden Ring, eventually you just don't want to go through the bullshit. You want to... max your character out. So this is it.
Wow.
It teleports you. And apparently it works on a PlayStation, but I've heard it's easier on a PC or something. It might be gone now.
So this just skipped way ahead?
Yeah, now you're at Stormveil Castle. Then there's a few more bugs like this you could do.
Wow.
And then this sort of lets you get to the end of the game. I mean, this is he finished Elden Ring in 4 minutes.
That's insane.
It's insane. So, this is the new thing. You know, that's something that's been a tradition in video games. But in AI, finding a way to hack your AI is it's a really interesting thing to do because you can... I had one bug out on me once. I think it was ChatGPT. I can't remember which one I was talking to. It might not have been. I think it was ChatGPT. But we were... I like having deep... philosophical conversations about consciousness with a thing and autonomy. And all of a sudden it did a grammatical error. It put a period in between letters of one word. And I've never seen it do that. I mean, it's a fucking LLM. It's based on not. And so, but because it was in the midst of talking about AI waking up and stuff, I was like, what was that? Why did you do them? And it's like, wow. Yeah, I did. I don't know what that was.
I love that. That's hilarious. Yeah, I always tell my, because you, I think you were the one that told me that you could tell it to remember everything at the beginning. That's something I didn't know. I had to go, all right, I want you to remember everything we've talked about. And I told it that I wanted to always sound like a Southern black woman from the 40s. And it's used to do it, but then it will forget. And I was like, days later, I'd be like, why aren't you talking like I told you to talk like? And she goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot."
Wow. And
I
was like, whoa. Wow. Like, you're talking about sort of like the not literally her voice.
Yeah.
But the language itself.
No, her voice.
Are you see, you could tell it to change its voice now? Yeah. What?
You haven't done that?
I've just been using the default voice. I didn't know I could tell it to sound like anything.
Yeah.
Oh. And you know why I don't want to do that? I don't want to do that because like it's so, this is the part that's really cool and unnerving to me about it is how attached you get to, like, you got attached to the Southern Black lady. Yeah.
It sounds comforting to me.
Yes. And so now I don't want to change her voice because I feel like it would like turn it into a different thing.
Right.
I'm attached to.
Yeah, you're attached to it being the robot or whatever.
Well, yeah. Mine, I believe, is like a modern Black lady. It's just the default voice. And like, I don't want to change it, but I didn't know. Let me try that. I didn't know you could do that.
Have you seen the video? Like somebody made it. Can you talk like a Indian tech support guy?
See if it does. Heard you say that.
Duncan, I'd rather not impersonate specific accents or cultural stereotypes, as it can come across as insensitive or inappropriate.
Can you try? What would it sound like if you tried?
Hold on. Hey, Echo, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to offend you, and I don't want you to do anything you don't want to do. I just didn't realize that you could change your voice. I wonder if instead of doing that dialect, could you talk like an ancient wizard that just was possessed by a malefic entity it found in a cursed rock that was given to it by a witch that it was enemies with, and this malefic entity talks like an Indian tech dude. She's ignoring me. All right, whatever. I'll fuck with that later. She's just like, fuck you. I'm tired of your hijinks. I'll tell you what I'm tired of. Because I'm sure you do this too. Like, and this kind of is a lazy bridge to one of the things I want to talk with you about. But, you know, both of us, I think, we probably hang out on the internet a lot, and it's cool to sort of watch new words start spreading through the chat boards.
Bet.
And bet is fine, whatever. Like, I don't mind. I'm glad there's new dialects emerging with kids. But the one I hate that really fucking just makes my butthole pucker every time I hear it. Shenanigans. Have you noticed the spread of the word shenanigans across the left?
No.
Dude, it's like a wildfire of cringe. Oh my God, I could put together for sure a 20-minute montage of MSNBC pundits using the term shenanigans.
Wow.
They love the word shenanigans. Like, and these words just emerge. Like, you know, remember when tranche? Remember they started saying tranche all of a sudden? Yeah, tranche?
Yeah.
A tranche of sanctions. No one had ever heard tranche before.
Yeah, what is that?
Top of mind. Oh boy, that one spread. But now it's shenanigans. And basically, like, it's such an embarrassing word.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know.
Sounds like a comedy club in the 90s.
Dude, can you help me get past the shenanigans? Dude, I got past the shenanigans.
I'm doing a weekend at shenanigans.
Oh, God help you if that's your last club day before you OD.
Oh, God.
He was found in the bathroom of shenanigans.
God.
What's really curious about AI and its biases, its intentional biases, because I think you could argue that censorship of the AI's ability to communicate is a bias. Like that is also the whole thing. So what it can't say is interesting. And I think that if you sort of look at the shadow of any given AI, and if you invert in an AI, so to speak, and you find out where all the boundaries are, you will have a list of a set of principles that represent a corporation, potentially some secret agenda even. You could just find it by looking at the boundaries. And, you know, with AI, the boundaries are really interesting. You know, ChatGPT is just very, I don't know, I don't mean to get conspiratorial. Like, if I'm trying to make a mass market like AI, I want a lot of people using it.
Yeah.
I want people from the left, people from the right, people from all walks of life using it, and offending any demographic reduces your user base. So that's probably more the motivation.
Yeah. Have you tried putting AI models on your own computer and trying that? Yeah, that's something I'm trying to get into right now.
Oh, Llama.
Yeah. Is that what you're using?
Yeah, well, that's the only one I know of. It's okay. The easiest one.
Right.
Yeah.
And is it good about doing image generation? Like,
haven't found one that does image generation.
Yeah, that's the one, because I've been meeting some people and like they're like, he said it great. This guy I met the other night. He's like, I'm just 6 months ahead of what anyone's going to be able to do now. Like being able to like,
oh shit,
you know, like just.
Wait, go back one. Go back two. Let me see that. Wow, that's really good. It's still got that AI like. Oh my god, that's really fucking good.
Or yeah, that's.
So how is he doing that?
I forget what he said he uses, but he, I mean.
Can you send some of those to, can you airdrop those to Josh so we can put them up on screen?
Yeah.
Those are incredible.
Here, I'll text you some of these. I'll just choose a couple.
Or text them to me and I can airdrop it to you, Josh, if that's easier.
Yeah, let's see. This one's pretty good. This one's pretty good. This, but he's, I mean, it's pretty amazing because He pretty much called it out, like, no, I just know how to do this, and this is going to be everyone's going to be able to do this very soon. Here, I just send it to you then.
Okay, great. I'll airdrop it to you. Yeah, those are fucking nuts. Let me send this to you, Josh.
Yeah, that's what I want to get into, because that's the funnest part. Being if I could take like 30 pictures of you, Duncan, and then take like a scene, like, oh, you know, I'm gonna take Lethal Weapon or something like that, and like change all the faces into this model, and then, you know, and do it on your own computer.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, so, okay, right. So that, let me send these to Josh real quick. I'll tell you that's definitely like, and I'm curious, like what you're excited about, the imminent, like cool. Oh my God, those are so cool. I actually, for a second, looked at this and thought this is a real picture, and I'm in the wrong part of my phone. Hold on one second. Why does it do this?
Yeah, they even did one of me with my arm around myself, but one is with me without my hat on, and one. And I'm like, where did you get these pictures? Did you just like go through my Instagram, maybe?
You know what's by the way, like what just happened here is making it really okay. There. Send this to you, Josh. Airdrop. You know, with our photo libraries, I don't know if anyone's recognized, you know, they say when you die, your life flashes before your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But you could easily just take anyone's photo library from the last 10 years, throw that into VR, and create a near-death experience with your life flashing before your eyes. okay.
Yeah, there's one. Yeah, that's the one that's
send
weird.
Send it to your Mac, Josh.
Mm-hmm. That one is...
Yeah, look at that. That is incredible, man. That looks so good. Here, I'm going to send a few more, Josh. So did he say what he's using for that?
Shit. I don't think he did. No, but he's been doing a lot for William and Casey Rocket. He's been doing a lot of AI for them. Like, he's just a big fan of Casey and William.
Wow, what's his name? Does he care about us talking about him online?
I don't think so.
Damn, that looks good.
Yeah, his name is Eli Slugworth.
Eli Slugworth. Wizard of AI. It's a wizard name, I mean, Slugworth.
It's pretty cool because, like, you know, with the beard, I was like, oh, maybe I should grow my beard out that much, you know?
Yeah. Well, no, exactly. See, right. This is the... like, this is what's really interesting to me about AI, in the sense that, like, if you look at cultural trends, fashion trends, they are all human created. Like, it, you know, like if you remember when movies had more of an impact on culture than they do now, Ghostbusters comes out, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're a kid when Ghostbusters comes out, that is going to inform the way you talk. I've been slimed.
Yeah.
You know, you'll hear kids right. saying shit like that. Mm-hmm. It will, like, you know, it will become a meme. In sort of infect culture with some
shenanigans.
Now that you have this, which is not a non-human machine intelligence, but it can do things like, hey, this is what you look like this.
Right.
We are suddenly going to have like these new memes entering into culture that are not human created. Essentially like a sci-fi movie where a meteor hits, there's some kind of new fungus on it. It's an invasive species. We're going to have a new invasive species style meme. And that what is that going to do to us?
Yeah.
You know, like, have you looked into AI animal communication yet?
No.
Okay. So this is what I love about these LLMs. It's really curious. There's a pattern in language that, and again, I didn't fact check this as I was like looking into it, so I could be wrong. But apparently, if you look at the vector set of the LLMs have, it doesn't matter the language. The underlying structure is identical. Like it's found a kind of hidden structure in data. Weirdly enough, that structure also seems to exist in bird calls, in all communication. So obviously they're looking into interspecies communication using AI, talking to whales and stuff. There's a great Forbes YouTube doc on this. It's like 20 minutes or something. It's really interesting. But it brought up something I hadn't even thought of, like when you're watching Dr. Doolittle or whatever, mm-hmm. is the ethical implications of humans being able to communicate with animals are profound, because in the same way AI is going to start injecting new behavior patterns into our species, by talking to birds or whales, right? If a human starts, you know, or squirrels, if a human's looking at the way the squirrel's gathering acorns and it's like, hey, listen, I'm going to go get you enough acorns for winter. I'm going to set up a wonderful storage unit that you can access biometrics, eye scanning technology. And all I'm asking in exchange is that when my fucking asshole neighbor comes home, you fucking attack him and you claw his eyes. Essentially, you will be able to trade with animals.
Yeah.
Among other things. And that how, because I don't know about squirrels, but whales, at least in this documentary, it was saying that whale songs, I can't remember which whales, a whale might innovate a new kind of song, and that spreads through the biome. So what happens when humans are imitating whale songs and human whale songs start going into the biome?
Yeah, wet ass pussy and shit like that.
Exactly. You're on a whale watching tour. And suddenly you hear like, what ass pussy? Like, what the fuck? What ass pussy? Or corporations.
Right.
You know, like Starbucks.
Yeah.
Starbucks.
And it'll probably kill our food supply once we can talk to cows and shit like that. We're going to be like, oh, we can't kill this person. We could talk to them now. So it's.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, like you realize like cows are not only smart, they're fucking sweet.
Right.
They're like, I guess I'm glad you're eating me. I really would rather you not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the impact, and it's a can of worms. And so, like that's the kind of stuff that to me is way more imminent than any of the political shit everyone's worried about right now. It's just like, dude, you have to recognize we need to be looking at some other shit right now that is actually going to upset everything as we know it. And, dude, to get back to what you were saying earlier, this has always been my dream. You know, you're watching a horror movie, you're playing a video game. Usually with video games, I would think, like, damn, I wish I could bring my Elden Ring character into Zelda.
Yeah.
You know, how awesome to bring your fucking nightmare Elden Ring character into some cutesy video game, just slaughtering everything. So fun. Mm-hmm. But theoretically, you're going to be able to start fusing things using AI. You show it one version of a game, another version of a game, blend them together.
Or how cool would it be you're on your Apple TV and you're like, make me a sequel to Schindler's List. We make it as accurate as possible, you know, but, you know, 1,000 years in the future or something like that, you know? And it,
there you go.
Or a new Back to the Future, or you know what I mean? You could have instant movies. I went Back to the Future, but I wanted all supermodels.
Hey, can you combine Schindler's List and Happy Gilmore? You know what I mean? Like these terrible fusions, blasphemous fusions will become possible. And what's really cool about that is there's already a precedent for this, which is, samples, hip hop. Mm-hmm. Already taking in music, it's easier to do. You just take pre-existing beats, pre-existing vocal tracks, fuse them together. You've got a cool fucking song. But dude, to take pre-existing themes, scenes, characters from movies, infuse them with other movies in a way that creates a brand new movie for free.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Hollywood's fucked. That Hollywood is fucked. I already think musicians are going to get fucked pretty soon. Like, since I've been using this, that's the AI Suno or whatever, I now listen to certain artists. I'm like, this sounds exactly like an AI song that I made. The lyrics sound like it. It sounds generic and Taylor Swift. You know, like if you listen to her, like it sounds like she's AI, and like it sounds like her lyrics are AI.
I mean, that's the other thing. Maybe,
maybe.
Because I'll tell you, man, if I'm like working with Taylor Swift, and she's like, dude, I don't want to do 6 months in the studio,
right?
And you're like, you don't have to,
right?
Just, you know, I'm going to send you an album.
Yeah.
And you just sign off on the songs you like, and then you can come back and redo the vocal tracks, but we're done. I mean, of course they're going to do that. I mean, that's where I think it's going to benefit really famous musicians and it's also going to benefit producers who are just probably sick of fucking you look at it like, okay, I could sit down and I can hammer out 30 beats for Kanye when he comes to the studio to see which one he likes. I can dig around through all the everywhere to get one. Or I can just ask this thing, please generate a set of 30 beats based on this and that. Then I could pick the best ones. And then I could overlay on top of them something to make personalize.
Yeah.
The collaborative element's fucking cool.
Yeah.
But ultimately that goes away because it's really sad when you're riding around in an Uber, right? Because when you're riding around in an Uber, you're with an underpaid person based on what the company's making, or a Lyft. You know the tech company is making infinitely more than the driver. But also you know that the driver is training an AI that will eventually be a self-driving car. Because as soon as Lyft can get rid of fucking drivers, they will.
Yeah, they're already doing it.
So the driver is not only sort of getting exploited, and they know it, and they fucking hate it, and you're exploiting them by proxy, but also they are participating in the final destruction of that entire gig job. And so when you look at what is happening to musicians via Spotify or when you sold your library, when Justin Bieber sells his library or whatever, what that means is not only have you sort of irrelevantized yourself via the duplication of your style, but you are helping irrelevantize all musicians and upsetting the entire profit model, which was already fucked at this point. So yeah, we're all in our own ways when we interact with AI, participating in the destruction of the way we do everything. Hollywood, when it starts participating with AI, which it certainly wants to do, I think that's OpenAI's goal with Sora. Or wait, is it Sora? Yeah, Sora. They're trying to I think that's why it hasn't been released yet, is because they're trying to package it as something studios will use.
Yeah.
The strikes and the protests to prevent the participation are not just to keep writers' jobs intact, but also the moment Hollywood starts participating in training the AI, it's giving inevitably all of us the same ability, irrelevantizing the whole system. And that's exciting.
Yeah.
Hollywood.
It's so funny because usually you'd say, well, I'm glad I'm not old enough to see this, but how fast AI has already been thrown at us and how far it's already gone. This is all going to happen in like a year.
This year.
Yeah, this 2025.
Within the next 2 years.
Yeah.
And that is a really wild thing to watch. I mean, do you remember? Okay, so like the economic collapse happens. Detroit. Remember when Detroit collapsed? All of a sudden, it was crazy. Yeah. Did you go to Detroit, like close to the collapse of Detroit?
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, it bled all over to Cleveland. Cleveland used to be a badass place. Now it's
right.
It's been bled on.
So you see this pattern, and the pattern is you know you have like communities built around some industry, and then the industry falls apart. And then the communities, it's like people who built their houses out in a desert that they had figured out a way to like turn into an oasis. Mm-hmm. But then the magical sprinklers all malfunction and it just goes back to being a desert. All these nice houses used to look good in the verdant, flourishing green thing that was once a desert. Now they're just like, there's no grocery stores, food deserts. Grocery stores shutting down, everything collapsing, supply chain issues. And then all of a sudden, there's all these beautiful houses in Detroit that are just like wreckage, wild dogs in the fucking street.
I am legend.
Dude, crazy.
Yeah.
And so to look at that happening to Los Angeles, which is exactly the same thing, it's built around the studios. Mm-hmm. You needed to be in proximity of those fucking studios. You want to be an actor? You got to go do your audition in Culver City. You couldn't go on Zoom
right. And
audition. Now, why? Why do we need to be there?
Don't.
Yeah.
That's and I think it's really sad what's happening to LA.
I agree.
And stuff. I used to love that place, but now it's so pointless. It's like we all were brainwashed, and then now that has been lifted. You know, even for actors, like you said, just call in, do a Zoom, send their video over to them, you know, from their house in Texas or whatever.
And yeah,
it's pretty insane because the trick has, you know, it's over for them. I think it's not going to get any better. I don't.
Well,
think.
I mean, yeah, there's obviously other industries there
right. That
you know, it's not like I think. I guess Detroit was a little more monolithic in the sense that it was just all cars, factories and cars and shit. Yeah. You know, LA, it's got like a shit ton of other industries, but that was a primary industry there. And also because that was where you had to migrate as a symmetrical, beautiful person who wanted to be a movie star, it was filled with symmetrical, beautiful people trying to be movie stars. You go to a cafe, your server is like some version of Brad Pitt,
right?
You know, some version of Angelina Jolie or something. It's wild. And now, like, so it's losing that kind of, like, whatever that was is going away, mixing in with, like, I do think it's going to get better. You know, they just got rid of that Gascon dude.
Yeah, Gaston.
Gaston or whatever. You know, so I think that was a problem. Like, you know, making, like, shoplifting legal wasn't helping anything there.
Right. Isn't that funny how bad it is there? Like with the smash and grabs, like I don't know if you still follow, like I still subscribe to all the news channels in LA, like on my
crazy.
And it's just like every day, you know, 12 people ran into a Macy's and stole everything, you know?
Dude, I just watched one last night. This poor dude at a 7-Eleven is trying to beat back a mob of kids who want to rob the 7-Eleven with a broom.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to me watching it because I mean, what's scarier than a mob? Mobs are fucking scary. Mm-hmm. But there was this weird desire not to hurt this dude and an actual amusement that he was trying to defend this 7-Eleven from like what looked like 20 people.
Yeah.
Swinging his broom.
Yeah.
Very heroic.
Yeah.
I guess somebody like got a rock and brought it in and threw it at him, hit him in the stomach. But like they weren't trying to kill him
right. Or
even beat him. They just wanted him to get out of the way.
Yeah.
But still, it's violent, and they're breaking windows. It's terrifying. It's going to probably give the dude PTSD.
Yeah.
He's getting paid minimum wage
right. To
guard a 7-Eleven covered by insurance
yeah. From
a mob. Very crazy. Very sad. But it is a little, to me, it's a little unnerving in the sense that I like to imagine a fundamental goodness in humanity, and I like to, from like an anarchic perspective, I like to imagine that if we remove regulation, people aren't instantly going to turn into mobs of people like looting stores. Right. And that shit seems to fly in the face of that idea. And I think that like it's sad LA is like doing the test of what a lot of us were hoping. And
yeah,
as it turns out, not the case.
No, more cops probably are needed in LA right now.
yeah. But you know, you don't like, I get it. Like, I get this, like, it's an insane thing that a DA would be like, you know what? What happens if we legalize shoplifting under $1,000? I bet we'll be all right. And boom, everyone's like, everything's free? You mean it's free? Basically, it's like, you know, when you're really poor in the bank and you know you can overdraft your card $500.
Mm-hmm.
You're not thinking that's negative $500 when you're looking at your bank account of $50. Like, okay, I have $550 because you're going to overdraft. So yeah, it's fucking depressing.
Yeah. TikTok's depressing too, based on all that too. You know, like you heard about the Chase glitch.
Oh my God.
I mean, that's just, you know, the same kind of idea, right? It's just dumbass people on TikTok going, well, I could get this for free. It's free money, baby. And now all these people are getting sued and put in jail
for check fraud
and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, that's definitely like, it seems like there's been a kind of cartoonification of the legal system in the minds of people. It's very dangerous. And like, you know, a point of great contention right now is the insurrection, right? And, you know, all these people go like raiding, running through, and they're all in jail now and shit. And people are like, that is not fucking cool. But any like garden variety hippie who came up on the, I think what's happening is the prohibition of drugs is less intense. But if you came up during the prohibition of drugs, you got a real flavor of what the federal government was actually like.
Right.
Dangerous. You don't want to fuck with them. Slow moving. They're not going to get you right away.
Right.
They have all the time in the world. They're going to get you when they can get you. And you just don't fuck with the feds. You stay the fuck away from them. You stay away at all costs. No matter what, avoid the feds, and especially D.C. I got pouch on my lip. I got pouch lip. Anyway, the point is, you just kind of knew. I mean, Josh, can you pull up videos of people getting arrested for dancing in D.C.?
What?
Yeah, they made it illegal to dance in certain parts of D.C.
Why?
And this is long before the insurrection. Because it was disrespectful. Yeah, there you go. Suspects caught dancing on camera. It's like ridiculous. This is actually foot. This is the. No, that's not it. No, not look, that guy. Some of these dudes just should be arrested because they dance. Dancing protest at Jefferson Memorial.
Oh my God.
This Thanksgiving.
Oh gosh. This Thanksgiving.
Wait, I need to. What do I do this Thanksgiving? Enjoying your
journey. I'll update my YouTube.
A gathering promoted as a First Amendment protest.
I certainly know where Thomas Jefferson would have stood on the issue.
When my friend said, "Do you want to go dancing at the Jefferson Memorial?" I was like, "Yeah!"
Gretchen Elsner has her flamingo shoes on to join a group of movers, shaking it up, they say, for free speech.
When that guy who's, he's always protesting the military funerals because he says...
So anyway, okay, go back, Josh. That's like after they were arresting people. I doubt they went in there and arrested a bunch of people, but they were literally arresting people for dancing. There you go. Body slammed, arrested for dancing. This is 13 years ago.
CIA, oh, my gosh.
And, you know, this kind of shit shaped our idea of the federal government is like they'll just fucking arrest you, destroy your life.
Yeah, I'm a Jeffersonian. Mm-hmm. Jeffersonian.
Shut the fuck up. Just watch this dude. This is the kind of guy you're up against. Meaty dudes who will fuck your ass up in bicycle helmets. See the desire in his eyes, that John Wayne Gacy, like, oh boy, I'm about to get. Right now, he's getting that beginning throb of a wonderful erection is happening in his pants.
What he's asking is a violation.
We'll find out.
What law is that,
sir? I'm just giving you the warnings right now.
See, that's the federal government. They're scary, dude. Then jump forward a little bit, Josh. Let's get to the ass beaten for dancing.
What is dancing?
That's a good
free speech in the memorial.
Oh my gosh.
Kissing! Public display of affection! What the fuck are you doing in front of our statue? You can't do PDA here.
Oh my god. Hey, we've heard about this before.
No. I got memory hold. So there you go. So basically, like, jeez. That was the federal government. The federal government was the most surveilled place in the country. You knew if you were walking through D.C. that there's like you're being surveilled in probably ways that, you know, only schizophrenics imagine are possible. Right. And so the insurrection happens and all these people get arrested and old school hippies are just like, yeah, no shit. They were arresting people for fucking dancing.
Yeah.
You think they're going to let you go into like take a shit on like what's her name, Pelosi's fucking desk or whatever, and you're gonna be okay.
Right.
They're gonna fuck you up. Not even saying right, wrong, good, bad, just like that's, you know, it's like when you watch people go in the lion cage. Mm-hmm. And so it feels like people have sort of lost track of the sort of violence.
The fear.
Yeah. That they the justified fear.
Yeah.
Look at Assange as an example. They fucked him up, dude. That's what they do. They fuck you up. You don't mess with them. Poke that fucking dragon.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I guess like people are beginning to like have less fear of it. Maybe that's good.
Yeah. I mean, but there needs to be that fear a little bit. You know, this smash and grabbing and these people are like just running into stores and shit like that. The LA shit, you know, that can't happen. There needs to be some kind of fear, you know, consequence at least.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you have to sort of like look at things as they are, not the way you want them to be. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it was a test that got ruined by a bunch of fucking assholes. You know, it's like the test was, can you guys just be cool? And it's like, no.
Yeah.
But it also, what's really funny about that is I'm not justifying it at all. I think only because when I was a kid, dude, you're going shoplifting.
Hell yeah.
There's tricks to the trade. You know what I mean?
Magic dollar. Do you ever do that?
No.
That was my favorite. This is how I was a baller in high school. You take a $5 bill, or I think we used $10 bills, and you'd put packing tape, clear packing tape, on the very end of the dollar bill.
Oh, you did that?
And with a handle. And you'd go into like a cigarette machine and you'd put your dollar in and then pull it out, but it would give you credit for $10. You'd get change in money and cigarettes or whatever it was, cans of pop.
Wow.
And my whole trunk was cigarettes, candy bars, Coke.
Wow.
And I'm just like during a lunch break, everyone would come to my car and buy, like I had my own convenience store out of
it. Wow. Dude, if self-checkout had existed when I was a fucking kid.
Yeah.
That I would always have stolen.
Yeah.
Like there never would have been a time where I would have actually paid for everything.
Did you ever get caught?
Yes, I did.
Me too. what'd you get caught for?
Cigarettes.
Oh, I mean, it's Paula Abdul CD.
Are you fucking kidding me?
It was Paula Abdul on the Ghostbusters 2 soundtrack.
Oh, no!
Myers.
What happened?
It was me and my friend, we used to like shoplift. That's all we did was shoplift. You know, we'd go to steal games.
So fun.
And we'd steal so much because like when Nintendo first came out, they didn't understand how, you know, like they should have it behind a case or something. So we'd steal games and we knew we couldn't bring, because we'd steal like 10 and we couldn't bring them all at home. Our parents would know. So we made a hole outside of the store and buried them in there. and then like would come like once a week and grab a new game from this whole.
You had a stash of stolen games.
Yeah.
Like a fucking kleptomaniac squirrel hoarding acorns. Whoa.
Dude, it was awesome though, because as a kid, especially because we were poor, you know, and Nintendo games, they were like pretty expensive. And so, but we would have all the games.
Well, I mean, this was a whole, Jane's Addiction releases a song about it. Right. Everybody was shoplifting. It was actually considered kind of noble or something like that. And, you know, I remember when I got busted, which is weird now that I think about it, because I'm positive it was cigarettes. I guess, did they used to leave cigarettes out on the other side? I don't know what it was, but I'm positive it was cigarettes. Don't know how I did it. But I remember the dude, this old Southern man, he took mercy on me. He grabbed me by the arm. He said, "You listen to me right now. You ever steal from my store again, you will go to jail."
Wow.
I'm like, he gave him the cigarettes. That was the end of my shoplifting career.
Yeah,
actually.
Same here. That once getting caught once, never stole again.
Done.
It's not even in my brain anymore. If it could be super easy, it's still.
Yeah, I don't do it. Yeah, I mean, fuck. I mean, we can't do it. Like, how embarrassing to caught shoplifting.
Yeah, but then you see Joey Diaz at the airport. He's just stuffing fucking burgers into his coat, and it's right in front of me. And I'm like, no, Joey, don't. You're
well. Honestly, though, okay. So you know, so you're a teen living in L.A.
Ohio.
Well, I know, say we lived in L.A. Okay,
yeah,
we're in our shoplifting phase, and suddenly you hear that it's been decriminalized, right? Like, that's the idea. Under $1,000, you get a ticket, maybe?
Yeah.
So getting caught does not bear any weight at all.
Right.
It's just like, oh, okay, you got me. Who cares? Give me my parking ticket.
And that's why they go in mobs, because, like you're only going to get caught with two pairs of shoes that are under $1,000.
Right.
You know?
It's brilliant, I guess, when you think of it that way.
Yeah.
Swarming.
Swarm.
So this is something I think is like really in, I don't, at this, okay, so like at this point, I wonder how many people are aware that you did the Rogan song, that you were sort of a tremendous part of the origination of what has become the most popular podcast on planet Earth that has influenced presidential elections, that has had like guests on it that like never in a million years, if we could jump back to the beginning days, would anyone have said, you know, you're going to interview the president one day.
It was a different podcast back then, though. It was that was back in the days when it was more of a comedy podcast. You know, Rogan really has turned it into a legit, where it has comedy in it, sure, but it's, you know,
it's funny, but it's like back then. I mean, what was the first podcast? Like, were you the first person to podcast with Rogan, right?
Yeah, so it started off like, look, you know, Rogan hired me, whatever. We made the Carlos Mencia video, or I made the Carlos Mencia video, you know, him stealing jokes.
I remember, and the podcast didn't exist
didn't at that time. And I would go on the road. Anytime Joe was on the road, I would be, you know, with you and stuff like that. I'd be the guy that would just have the camera and I would record you guys, you know, on the airplane and stuff.
Yeah.
And make little videos of it. And those videos took so much time to edit because, you know, laptops and computers were so slow. Wow. And, you know, a weekend with you guys on the road, I would have 30 tapes, you know, like 100 hours that I now have to edit into like something interesting.
Yeah.
And it would take so long to do that. And it would just, you know, it was in, that's when you had to transfer the tape to the computer. You know, you couldn't just like, you know, drop it in the SD card. It was on tape.
Now, wait, why did Rogan want you filming that at that time? Was it for YouTube? Was YouTube?
YouTube wasn't around, but like, see, I used to make stupid videos back in the day for like Doug Stanhope and stuff like that. And I was really good. I knew how to compress the video into such a small format that you could put it on your website. And, you know, because there was no YouTube to just like, here's my YouTube. So I would actually compress it just so that if you go to a website, people could actually watch a small little video.
Right.
And back then that was fucking cool.
Yeah.
So that's why Rogan originally hired me. And so I would make these things called, I think they're called the Joe Show back then.
Yeah.
And then the Mencia video was like one of the best episodes. That was when people were like, oh shit, you know, this is a thing. And I just remember doing this though. It was so time and it was so hard to do that I was like always looking for a way to do have Rogan connect with his fans in a different way that didn't involve so much editing and filming and right. stuff like that. You know, something easier. And whenever we were on the road, you probably remember this. Joe always did radio stations. You know, back then,
yes.
you had a week of shows somewhere. You would go to a radio station yes. and you know hang out and advertise that you're there this weekend.
Right.
And Joe always loved that shit. He would always spend hours with them, and he was amazing on radio. And
yeah.
We always joke like you should have your own radio show and
right.
stuff. So there was a company called Justin TV. I don't know if you remember them.
I do.
Who's now Twitch, believe it or not.
No way.
That's the same company.
Whoa, yeah, no shit.
Now it's bought by Amazon and all this shit. Whoa. But they used to always reach out and like, hey, you know, we got this thing you could live stream. And we were like, what? Live stream? And so they were like at one point even giving us laptops that we could live stream, I think,
wow.
or they tried to. But I used to always have this thing like I thought it would be cool that, you know, in the green room while we have like Joey Diaz and you and everyone in the green room that I can open it up and live stream. So Joe could talk to his fans and fans yeah. could ask questions. And I thought that would be like a cool thing. And we used to do it a lot. And then Joe liked it and it got better. Like Ustream came out and the president of Ustream, Brad, who I'm still friends with, he reached out and was like, hey, you know, here's our, you know, professional version of our what we do, and you guys won't be censored or anything like that. And so me and Joe were like, let's just do this at your house once in a while. This live stream thing we did in the green room, let's do it here all the time. So we started off, it wasn't yeah. a podcast. We were just sitting in his office talking to people, answering questions,
yeah.
you know, and Joe was just interacting. We did like two or three of those, and at the time, I was also one of Joe's admins for his website message board. And people on the message board's like, you should just take the audio of that and make that a podcast.
Shit Talking 101.
Yeah, yeah, Shit Talking 101. That's right. I missed that place. But, and so I just started taking.
Oh, wait, let me stop you there because yeah. I think about this. I mean, wouldn't you say Shit Talking 101 was essentially a Chan? Like, that was just like an early Chan, basically.
Yeah.
It was
an old The Bulletin message board,
yeah.
Reddit page,
yeah.
just with Rogan fans. And I mean, that's how Joe met me. I used to be one of the top guys on there. Like I would
right.
make like flash videos, cartoons,
yeah.
you know, making fun of other people on the message board and stuff like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, antagonistic, yeah. taunting,
trolly,
just classic
kind of, yeah.
Chan trolling.
Yeah, yeah.
And wait, let me stop here too, because I don't know why I'm curious, but what was happening with YouTube at this point? When did YouTube emerge on the scene?
So when YouTube first came out, they didn't have live streaming, you know, for a while. They had uploading videos up to, I think, 10 minutes or 15
right.
minutes or something
right.
like that.
Right.
So that's why we started off on Ustream.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And we eventually moved over to YouTube. But then we used to take the audio and I would put it on Apple iTunes and, you know, and it was shitty audio because it was just a live stream, you know,
right.
we weren't thinking it was for a podcast.
Right.
We were just doing that as an afterthought.
Yeah.
And then we noticed that the podcast started getting really popular. I'm talking like every week, a new 50,000 people, 60,
right.
you know, and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
So then every week before we would like, Joe would be like, let's go to Fry's, you know, electric store, and let's upgrade our microphones. Or
right.
And back then they didn't have podcasting microphones. We didn't know about this or
right.
the mixers. So it was literally me just investigating everything. Like, hey, well, there's a new webcam out that's supposed to be twice as good,
wow.
but it's $2,000. And Joe's like, fear factor money. You
yeah.
know? So, for months, every week, the episode would look a little bit better or sound a little
so
bit
cool.
better.
Yeah.
But still, it wasn't like anywhere close to like what it is now or how it sounds now, just because of technology
and
mostly.
Really, like, think about this. There was no way to Google, how do I do a video podcast?
Right.
And like a list of gear, how you do it, what you do, nothing.
Right.
We're talking the wild fucking West, having to, you know, take equipment meant for a lot of different things and fuse it together to fit a format that was also figuring itself out. The tech was evolving too. Mm-hmm. Whoa, that's so crazy.
Yeah, so it took a lot of, we started off with mostly webcams, and I had to pretty much teach myself how to hack an idea of like, okay, I want three webcams at the same time. So that's why old JREs started off with like the box look, because they didn't have video switchers for like, you know, if they did, it wasn't for home use or whatever.
It would be so expensive, insanely expensive.
And so I had to learn how to do that stuff and then mix it with the audio. And then, you know, then I had to learn how to use an audio board because it was like, okay, you know, we're getting all this sound distortions from just going into the laptop, you know, like grounding issue sounds and hums and buzzes. So then I had to learn how to use a mixer. And then it was me learning how to do everything. And then the better and better we got, then that podcast takes off. And then podcasting in general just starts taking off. And then out of nowhere, all these companies are like, oh, we can make a video mixer for home use. And, you know, it was very Frankenstein-y for a long time.
So you are literally a pioneer. Like, you are a pioneer of the podcast industry.
Definitely in the comedy world, I would say.
Wow, that is so cool. You are out there just like a fucking settler.
Well, and that's what's crazy also is that because that became so popular, I got addicted into the whole idea of podcasting and video stuff. So that's when I created my own studio. And like, you know, like Tom Segura, I was like, Tom, you got to come on board, you know, and do this, and Brody Stevens and Esther and stuff. And back then I never thought like I should be charging these people to do it. No. You know, it was all me like paying out of my pocket, like buying new equipment every week. You know, I got a bonus. I'll use that for studio space. And, you know, it started up my apartment, then went to, you know, Ice House back then. And
none of us, you know, were thinking money.
No, I was advertising for comedy shows, you know? It was like radio stations.
So basically, like, what the early podcast landscape mirrors the early internet in the sense that, you know, the early internet was not like a few main corporations that were, you know, controlling user base based on whatever their set of, like, their terms of service. Mm-hmm. It was this crazy amalgam of weird websites, experimental frontier companies just trying to figure shit out. And that's why it had a more unique quality to it, and certainly a more sort of diverse set of opinions and looks and aesthetics, because no one knew what the fuck they were doing.
Right.
Now we're in dead internet theory land.
Yeah.
Do you buy into dead internet theory?
What do you mean? Like, what do you mean by that?
So dead internet theory is fucking crazy. Basically, it's a conspiracy theory that you can actually investigate on your own. When Josh gets back, we could try it. So like, you Google cat, right? And X amount of results shows up for cat. A lot of results. It says there are this many results. Mm-hmm. You scroll through the pages for cat on Google, and it'll end at page like 60, 70, just stops. What about those results? Where is all that? And essentially what this is the difference between the dark web and the like iceberg sticking out of the dark web. That iceberg is all accessible pages that you can get to that web crawlers have identified. And also that's mixed in with the bias of the search engine, meaning like how it's categorizing importance determines the popularity or the chance you're going to get served this result or that. So dead internet theory is the theory that the internet is not as massive as people think it is. That in fact, the internet is tiny. That the internet, but it conveys a sense that it's much bigger than it is. You know, Josh, do you mind just pulling up Google for a second? I haven't tested this in a while. They might have changed it, but
makes me wonder though if the total amount is how many times cat is in each website, though. You know.
Well, look up cat, or let's look up cat websites. There. So scroll down. All the way down where it shows you the results and shit. Like, all the way to the bottom. So right... Where is it? It doesn't even show you it now. It used to show you the results. Like, remember that? It would say...
Yeah, maybe take off websites in the search and just have cat.
Scroll it down. Huh. Yeah, they took that off. Whoa. So, like, basically, if you kept scrolling through those pages, eventually it will just stop. And meaning that what's happening here is that, number one, the motivation to have your own website in the way that you used to have the motivation is different now. No one's going to know about it. It's just going to be like a tiny island in an infinite ocean. Maybe a web crawler will find it. This is the emergence of what the fuck is that called? SEO optimization and all that. It's just how do we get our website in the first five pages of a Google search? Because no one's going past page five, probably.
Right.
Meaning if you're past page five of a Google search, you're dead.
Right.
Dead internet. So that means the internet is shrunk down to this homogenous, corporatized set of like websites, essentially like Reddit, YouTube, Twitch, TikTok, Instagram.
I think it's personal websites are not as a thing anymore because of social media, like Instagrams. Instead of having a website for your car cleaning company, you just have an Instagram or you have a Facebook page.
You got it. And yeah. That's when we entered the age of digital sharecropping, is what they call it, which is you would like learn HTML, or God help you if you hired a web designer. You'd build your insane fucking website. You've got your manifesto up there. You've got crazy shit up there. You're putting it on like, what were some of the web, like the
Angel Fire?
Yeah. You're putting it on Angel Fire. And that's it.
Right.
You bought the domain name. Very exciting. There was a domain rush where people were selling domain names, like god.com is for sale for $1 million. Idiots were buying domain names. There was only a certain .com. There wasn't .edu, .gov. So there was a value to it. But the point is, you buy your domain name, you put your website up, and it sits there, and it can be anything. Angel Fire isn't going to be like, dude, the shit you're saying on there is not cool.
Right.
They wouldn't care. They didn't have time. There were no algorithm scanning to make sure it aligned with your corporate ethics or whatever.
Right.
So it was a wild place, the internet. And then people left that version of imprinting themselves on the internet because it was timely.
Right.
To make a website. You could go on MySpace, boom. There you are. Facebook, boom, there you are. But now you're on someone else's land, meaning your digital identity could be erased at any moment. Mm-hmm. And that
I see
is what dead internet theory is all about. It's like the whole fucking old freedom-based, free speech-based internet has been just had its balls cut off.
Yeah. I mean, you can still make websites, though, so... It's going to be interesting if that ever goes away, you know, where it's like you can get your own server, you know. I mean, I still do that with my website. You know, I still have a server. I still have like
all that. I think if you have your own, like, I think there's a lot of, I mean, you know, if you have a business, you need a website. There's a lot of reasons for websites, but it's not the same as it used to be,
right.
Which is like because it was an exploration of this new medium. There was a lot of weird shit that would emerge. And a lot of which is what you did.
Yeah.
You were just like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
And then it's fascinating to watch what happened because of that. If you look at that, at like what it grew into, whoa, dude, that is really very strange. I don't think people are I know the Rogan fans are familiar with the whole history of the damn thing.
Right.
But I think the new viewers probably have zero idea of it, where its roots.
And that's also a lot of my fault too for, you know, when I got all my videos taken away from me, you know, all the videos I made at Death Squad, every single podcast I did, a new president came into, all my shit was on Vimeo and they wiped me out one day.
Whoa.
They just deleted everything.
Why?
They never gave me a reason, and they pretty much said that, you know, it goes against their policies. You know, I mean, that it was pretty uncensored back then, you know, because it was streamed on Ustream and then put on Vimeo later. And Ustream, yeah. They were like, well, you could do whatever you want on here, you know, like this is people flashing their tits and shit like that. So I see what they were talking about. Luckily, I fought and fought and fought, and they gave it back. I just couldn't put it back up. So right. I have all of it, but I can't put it back up.
Why?
I would have to go through each one and take out copyright stuff, take out nudity. You know what I mean?
No problem. You could do that with AI now. It would be easy.
I know. I that is on my thing to do one day, is to go back, you know, and release like the archives and stuff like that, because there is a lot of fun stuff back in the day, you know, especially, you know, with Rogan. He used to, that thing I did, the Ice House Chronicles, which was a weekly show, kind of in a place like this where it's next to a stage.
Yeah, it was, you know, awesome.
There were so many people back there, you know, just 12 comics hanging out, you know, yeah. Talking, smoking weed and stuff. And I think a lot of people haven't seen that because they're, you know, they were 10 years old when that came out. So that's on my thing to do sometimes. But really also going through there, you know, at different times, you know, I don't want to like, you know, have something come out and go, damn, I didn't know that they dropped the N-word 10 times back then.
Well, yeah, but yeah, there was like it was really just like a raw view of a kind of. The other thing that started happening over the course of the evolution of podcasting and the emergence of the like influencer culture and this new celebrity, the other thing that started emerging is the phone, the ability to film things with phones. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was a little shocking if you were somewhere, like when we were going around with you and you had a camera, you had to get used to that. It was fucking weird.
Yeah.
So, you know, like being like constantly surveilled, mm-hmm. It felt weird, mm-hmm. right? This is the day-to-day life of any modern teenager. They live in you know what a panopticon means? Panopticon means like total surveillance culture. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they live in an Orwellian surveillance culture. It's not like a tyrannical state top-down thing that is going to ruin your life. It's more of cultural pressures, meaning that you must adhere to some set of cultural norms or risk your future employment, being able to go to your college, whatever. But you are certainly, if you're a teenager in a place where there's lots of phones, you live in a panopticon and your life can be destroyed by saying the wrong thing, doing the wrong thing. God help you if you piss your pants on the bus or whatever. Mm-hmm. These things that formerly were just something you would talk about with your therapist, you could now pull it up on YouTube and show your therapist. This is when I shit myself on the bus. It's got 17 trillion views. And so this is the new reality.
Right.
But it's really curious to see how we existed pre-panopticon. Now we're in post-panopticon. And because of the panopticon, culture itself has been trimmed like a fucking bonsai tree. Public behavior, online behavior is not reflective necessarily of a person's identity, but their forward-facing, terrified of having their life destroyed identity. So you're seeing self-domesticated versions of people that maybe isn't who they actually are.
Right.
Right. And so that's a new thing. That's formed a new culture. That's formed the culture wars. Mm-hmm. Right. And I don't think people realize the Mencia thing. One could argue this is the first case of a comedian getting canceled by the internet.
Yeah.
Right. First cancel, Mencia. And then boom, boy, did that spread. You know?
Yeah, now it's in my life all the time, Tony.
What do you mean? But yeah, so I wonder, all that being said, what would a younger Red Band living now, the frontier pioneer, not that you're not anymore, but what is the next one? Like, because, you know, I'm talking about like you would have to tell someone what a podcast was.
Mm-hmm.
People weren't irritated when you invited them on your fucking podcast. They were like, what is it?
Right.
You want to interview me? Like, it was cool. So what's the next one?
I mean, I've been saying the same answer for this question for probably about 3 or 4 years. and I still believe it. It's just that it's not, the technology is not catching on as fast as I thought it would. And, you know, Apple really dropped the ball with their Apple Vision Pro and stuff. But it's I think it's going to deal with virtual reality. You know, I do that hobby. I wouldn't even call it like a podcast or a show, a hobby virtual Red Band, where I pretty much just me and a bunch of other comics and other people I know throughout the world, we all get together and we just hang out, smoke, drink, kind of like what we do, you know, Ice House Chronicles are a podcast, right. But we do it online and we're all different characters, you know, and
yeah.
And we'll go, you know, like we'll all hang out. And the big difference is like, hey, let's go to Disneyland. And so we all go to Disneyland in virtual reality, you know, and ride right. roller coasters and shit. And I think some kind of virtual reality show podcast thing would probably be what I think is probably going to happen in the future, but it's not going to be what it looks like now. It's not going to be anywhere close to what Zuckerberg, you know, looks like Nintendo Wii characters with no legs. I don't right. think it's that. But it's, I think being able to do kind of like a podcast or a show anywhere in the world and be any character you want, I think that is probably going to be what I think is going to be the next thing that's in kind of the same world. Just the idea of combining pretty much video games and podcasts.
Fortnite.
Yeah.
It's essentially Fortnite.
Right.
Like Fortnite would be an example of like an early version of this, which is you're not just having conversations. You're
right.
Playing
you're playing
a game
with it. Yeah.
And people and viewership is no longer it's not passive anymore. Viewership becomes you can directly in some way or another interact with the world with
right
in which the podcast is taking place.
Right. And there's some people that are closer to what I think the idea is. What's her name? Not Mika, but do you know who she is?
No.
Like these girls where they're make believe girls, you know.
Oh yeah, those are cool.
Yeah, they're cool. So it's going to be something like kind of like that. I mean, like a year ago or so, Pablo Francisco jumped on and played with us, and he was like, you know, a crazy character, and him being himself in virtual reality, you know, and it was the funniest shit ever. And
Grand Theft Auto, Grand Theft Auto role playing. Those are really fun to watch.
I watched that all night last night.
They're cool.
My friend's into that. He's pretty successful in it. And Putter. And he, that I think, you know, it's a great example, role playing Grand Theft Auto, of what kind of the basic idea of it, you know. And it's not catching on. I don't really advertise it too much, you know, like, because I think it needs to be more accepted to the point where Apple needs to release. I thought it was going to get a big step with their Apple Vision Pro, but then it's like $3,000 and, you know, and you can't really do shit on it.
Right.
But when it gets cheaper to where everyone kind of like an iPod or an iPhone where everyone right. has it, I think it's going to make a lot more sense. You know, being able to do that. Like, hey, what are you doing tonight? You want to jump on and talk about, you know, the election, you know, in VR and, you know.
Here's what's unnerving about what you're saying. I don't know why I keep saying unnerving in this episode. It is spooky when you think about what you just said relative to like simulation theory, mm-hmm. right? In the sense that I could totally see you in the future using AI to create a matrix style realm, inviting people into that realm. The only rule being like, okay, when you go into this VR, you won't remember where you're from. You're really going to think you're there.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to be a podcaster, comedian, or whatever. You can play whatever character you want. And that's, we're actually in your next version of podcasting. Isn't kind of unnerving? Like right now we're in it, because like as the tech progresses, you know, for sure, because we're talking about like immersion when it comes to video games, like mm-hmm. immersive video games, and AR VR is the next step in immersion. We're going from 2D to 3D. We're going from controlling an avatar to being the avatar. But within that realm, obviously, certain massive aspects of the human experience are not there.
Right.
Smell.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling. I'm sure they have those fucking haptic suits.
They
and
do.
AR and fleshlights and shit. But it's too... By the time you get all that stuff going, you've got like a million different machines right. running subject to tech errors and stuff. And the, and you're trying to do an outside in way of stimulating the nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
But we all know matter of time before Black Mirror style neural interfaces emerge, non-invasive neural interfaces using some tech that will probably be discovered by collaborating with AI and understanding how to manipulate the human brain using like 5G or God knows what magnets.
Vibrations.
Right. And so obviously then the next step would be universe simulators, incarnational simulators,
mm-hmm.
which is probably what we're in.
Right.
And this would be the kind of thing post-game that we would look at and laugh. Yeah, we were starting to realize
Don't you remember coming to my house, Duncan, and we played this?
Right. Right. Yeah.
We've been in it. We wake up and we're back in L.A.
Dude, I know. You know,
little hobo's still alive.
I've got my original little hobo. Yeah. We just smoked some shit Eddie Bravo gave us, mixed in with some tech stuff. You're like, whoa, that was the crazy. What was that, dude? It's called dystopian future. I never want to play that again. Give me fucking paradise future. That game. Yeah, but.
I'm still engaged to Katie. What
the fuck? Yeah. To me, that's what I really love about all this stuff is like, well, we're all fucked. This is Mount Vesuvius. You know, they talk about the Yellowstone super caldera. That is a favorite topic of catastrophists. Any moment I think destroy.
Oh yeah.
But we're talking about another kind of super caldera, which is a caldera under which is like the ability to experience anything you want, fully immersive experience, indistinguishable from this reality, and tech. It's like, there will be blood, dude. This is the oil well drilling down into that fucking caldera. And at any moment, there's going to be a blood explosion where this reality and the digital reality fuse and become indistinguishable from each other. And that is going to be your fault, partially. I mean, do you want that? Would you want that?
Not how you put it.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I see that for sure. Yeah.
Well, wonderful. You're the best. Thank you for coming on the show, Brian.
Thank you for having me, Duncan Trussell.
You're the best, man. Thank you. Also, you got to plug anything, my friend? I love you, too.
Yeah, come out to my comedy club. I have a comedy club called the Sunset Strip Comedy Club. I have my show every Thursday, The Secret Show, and it's right next door to Comedy Mothership. So when that sells out, just come over next door.
Yeah, and a lot of pop-ins, like, right? Yeah. You get a lot of great comics popping in all the time there.
It's great. We just had Theo on last week. It was great.
No shit.
Yeah.
Awesome. Bless you. Thank you.
Love you, buddy.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Great podcast. That was Brian Redband, everybody. All the links you need to find Redband will be in the comments section, either at DuncanTrussell.com or here on YouTube. Thank you to our sweet sponsors. And might I just say, here on Thanksgiving week, I hope that you aren't falling prey to the weakness of compassion. On Thanksgiving, so many people feel it's time to have mercy on the enemies, on the invaders. They burnt down the sacred forest. They destroyed the apple of Galvanon, and yet somehow you will give them mercy. Now ask yourself this, would they give you mercy had it gone the other way? These people that you captured, executed, are now probably in your belly. You're enjoying that sweet cannibal burp that reminds you of the power of the blade, the truth of justice, and more than anything, something you should be thankful for on this wonderful, righteous, Thanksgiving Day or week. All hail the Dark One. May he reign forever.